Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the second day of November, Anno Domini 2024, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? No, clearly you haven't. Before we do the news, I have a couple of things to say. First, the pledge drive is over, so it's safe to call into the show again. We did not make our goal. We did not make our goal by $20,000.
Yep.
So that's a problem. I don't know what that bodes for the future. But,
wait and see.
It was bad. The old archives, I talked last week about how Don Nichols' widow was kind enough to give us all his tapes.
Yeah, the old tapes.
I've put them up, the ones that were that I could.
Yeah.
There's 27 of them. Some of them are not complete. There were a couple that were so badly damaged. They're 40 years old, folks.
Yes.
You know,
and
I couldn't get them up there.
Like you were saying, though, it's probably because he was putting a mic up to the radio and trying to record off of that.
And a couple of times the you know how when a battery gets low, it goes slow and then fast. And then
yep. Peaks.
There's one of those, and I just didn't. I just gave up.
Yeah, right.
It was a lot.
You can only do with what you got,
right? But there are 27 of them up there, and we want to again thank Mrs. Nichols for giving us those. It's wonderful. It really is helpful. The next announcement is. It is time to turn your clocks back tomorrow morning.
Yep, fall
for
back.
Most of you, all of them will be automatic, except now your car will be right for the next 6 months, or wrong, depending on when you bought it.
Yep.
And it is Daniel Boone's birthday. That's important. The most important announcement, however, is that I lost a crown last night. So there will be times when I slur. And times when I just stopped talking because I bit my tongue again.
Ouch.
So I apologize in advance for all of that.
One thing I want to go back just what you were saying, though, as far as, not making our goal. I mean, it is very disappointing, but I understand, you know.
I get it.
And there's nothing to stop people from, you can keep pledging if you want.
Yeah, I mean, please.
Right,
if
you pledge now, that's
easy.
Yeah,
the pledge button is still on the Jazz website.
Just because, you know, we're not pushing it, and that doesn't mean, you know, and you really love it. I mean, with the holidays coming, and it is a time of giving, that if you can even give us an extra, you know, 5, 10, whatever you can afford, you know.
What I did last year was I got the membership level that gives you two of the member cards, and I gave them to my wife and daughter in their stockings.
Yeah,
and
those are gifts that keep on giving.
They use them all the time. I've already mentioned my daughter went to Disney World. You have to set it up ahead of time. You can use
but
them down
still
there.
And all,
they're
it's
great.
It's possible.
Anyway, to the news. Apple had an exciting week of announcements, primarily focused on the Mac and Apple Intelligence. There's a lot to go over, but here's a summary. Let's start with the new Mac Mini. Apple unveiled a redesigned Mac Mini with the M4 and M4 Pro chips. It features a smaller design, Thunderbolt 5 connectivity, supports 3 displays, and starts at $600. And it looks almost like an Apple TV.
A little bit bigger. It's so cute.
It's so cute. Apple Intelligence, Apple's AI frame, is now available to the public with iOS 18.1, iPadOS 18.1, and macOS Sequoia. It offers features like writing tools, cleanup in photos, and notification summaries. So finally, that Verizon commercial isn't lying to us anymore. According to Apple CEO Tim Cook, or Tim Apple if you prefer, Even though it's only been out for a few days, it's already been adopted twice as fast as Apple's previous iOS 17.1 update. Apple also announced new MacBook Pro models with the M4 family of chips and Apple Intelligence. The Apple Pro also comes with USB-C. In related news, some of Apple's last holdout accessories have switched from Lightning to USB-C, like the Magic Mouse and the keyboard. And the Mac Pro now boasts between 18 and 24 hours of battery life, depending on the model. M2 and M3 MacBook Airs got bumped up to 16 gig of RAM for no extra money. That used to be a $200 price bump. Apple has also released security updates for just about every operating system they have, including Vision OS. And last but absolutely not least, Apple services revenue hit a new high of just under $25 billion in the fourth quarter. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is This Week in Apple. And your choices are very exciting, intriguing, interesting, meh, app what now? So far we've got 23 votes, and one very exciting, one intriguing, one interesting, and the rest are pretty evenly split between app what now and meh. So you can, if you want to talk about that or dang or anything else, give us a call, 585. Remember, it's now safe to call us, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415.
The one thing that they didn't announce is the M4 Ultra chip. Which means that the highest-end Mac Studio and Mac Pros are still using the M2 Ultra, two generations old. And that we don't know about that. And there's still time. They could announce something more in November. But they did say, you know, this finishes our M4 chip lineup, unless there was a subtle for now at the end of there that we didn't hear.
Or moving forward to something else.
So What do you think that means? Is there a problem with the M4 Ultra?
Or maybe they're going to M5.
They just didn't sell enough of the M2 or 3 Ultras to justify making a 4.
Well, the thing, I still contend, and it doesn't matter whether it's Mac or PC. Granted, these chips are a little faster, you know, and they require people then to upgrade their machines, spend more money. Which, and right now, with everything else, the inflation and groceries and all this other stuff is hitting people big time. There is nothing that is like the big wow factor that they're going to come, they've come out with that, you know, folks have to say, oh, I got to go and stand in line overnight and have this or that. And it doesn't matter whether it's Mac or PC. Like I said, it's died off. There is nothing that, you know, matter of fact, our phones can do quite a bit of the stuff that we used to do on our laptops or even our desktop computers, even down to playing games. You know, with the bigger fold-out screens and all that, folks are content with that. The only big thing there, which I've said for a few years now, is they got to get the GD battery life up.
Right.
Make the phone a little bit thicker. And wind up having a little more battery life. But there, other than that, there is nothing that, come this holiday season, because we're getting right into it now that we're November 1st, there's nothing. Oh, I got to quick save up my money because, yeah, come the Black Friday, that I want to go get this or do that. There is no big PC, laptop, tablet, or anything else that is compelling folks to go out there and spend their dollars.
Well, I got to say, the MacBook Pro with 24 hours of battery life.
Yeah, that's
pretty impressive.
Yeah. That is. No, they're headed in the right direction.
And we have already heard from several of our very high-end customers in recording studios and ad agencies. You know, he wants to trade in the $5,000 he bought last year to get a new $5,000 computer this year because it's 20% faster.
Right, that's important to them.
Yeah.
Because that's what they do. But yes. There have been really, honestly, very few wow moments in computing history. Mm-hmm. The introduction of the Macintosh was one.
Mm-hmm.
The introduction of Windows 95 was one. 3.1 was not much of a wow factor, and none of the Windows were, but 95 was kind of wow. The Lisa, certainly. The iPod certainly. Mm-hmm. Less so the iPhone. We took an iPod and stuck a phone in it. That was nice, but not as wow as the iPod itself.
Some of the first engineering leaks at the time showed the iPod that had that the wheel on it that you spun. They replaced that with a rotary dial. There's your iPhone.
Yeah. There have been, and beyond that, what were the wow moments? If you can think of a wow moment that I missed, give me a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
They're kind of hoping that AI is going to be the next wow.
Right.
But right now, it isn't artificial intelligence, the way sci-fi tropes talk about it all the time. But being able to analyze huge volumes of data and come up with summaries. And in fact, to your point, not all of Apple Intelligence features are available yet.
Right.
The really cool ones are going to be next spring. The generated emoji where you say, you know, draw me a dog with a Tyrannosaur hat on. That's going to be in the spring. So we're starting to roll it out. So all the commercials are less wrong.
Less wrong, but still wrong.
But in the very tiny print at the bottom of the commercial, because I freeze frame and looked, it did say coming later on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the woman
says, what we're talking about is there's this commercial where it's a Verizon commercial. And the woman says, oh, I just got the new iPhone 16 and Apple Intelligence is amazing. And every time it came on, I would yell, how would you know?
Yeah.
It's not out yet.
Yep.
Now it finally is.
It's going to be amazing.
Going to be amazing, you can say.
That's not as good a commercial.
But again, I'm not talking about ooh moments. I'm talking about wow moments.
Yeah, and
things that really floor you. The introduction of the iPod changed an industry. That's a wow moment.
We have not seen that in the past two Christmases.
Three, four, ten Christmases. We really haven't seen anything that compelled people.
Yep. That they got to stand in line and wait, whether it's overnight or whatever.
Right.
That they had to have it. Couldn't live without it.
Right. And you get those, there are those fanboys, B-O-I-S, fanboys who will stand outside of an Apple store and have to be the first one to get the new model.
Mm-hmm.
That's different from a wow moment.
Yeah.
In a wow moment, you get real people, not just fanboys.
Mm-hmm.
And so there haven't been that many.
Yep.
You know, there, and that doesn't mean that there aren't good things out there. I don't know that, other than the original announcement by Linus Torvalds, that there's ever been a wow moment for Linux, but it's out there, and there's never been a wow moment for Chromebooks, but look how many have been sold. So a wow moment is not necessary, but everybody expects one every time there's an announcement of something. You expect a wow moment, particularly with Apple.
Because they've had so many, and they've touted them up so much.
Right, and you expect wow, and when wow doesn't come, there's a huge letdown. It's managing expectations, and Apple doesn't do that very well.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody expects anything good out of Microsoft anymore. So when they do have something good, it's a wow moment all by itself.
Yeah, but then you wonder, all right, even though it's a wow moment, how long will it really last on the market?
Right. Because, and I'm talking about a wow moment across everything. So there's the new, when the M2 Ultra chip came out, there were certain segments of the industry who said, mm-hmm. wow, I got to have that right now.
Yeah.
But it wasn't general wow. People who do word processing for a living never will need an M2 Ultra chip.
Yep.
Now, there will come a point, I think, when the M2 Ultra chip is cheap enough that people who only do word processing could buy one.
Yeah.
But it's not really going to do them a lot of good. You know, we've said this before, computer already spends 99.9% of its time waiting for you to type the next letter. It doesn't matter if it's going to spend 99.99999% of its time waiting.
Well, now everyone is building intelligence into their every single product. So that some of the commercials are showing, you know, you have a grammar checker that says that's too wordy, but now the grammar checker, you can say, well, rewrite that a little better for me using, you know, the intelligence features.
I'm not saying there aren't great things. I'm saying those are not wow moments.
And that's why you need the super fast processors now.
Right.
And was it Microsoft is reactivating Three Mile Island? Because building these giant large language models We didn't, you know, GLM doesn't quite make as much sense as LLM. The power they're drawing is just ridiculous to create these AI models to begin with.
Yep.
Once they're created, they don't take up. That's one of the reasons Apple had to upgrade the RAM on all their computers is to fit the AI in 8 or 10 gigs of RAM.
AI is being touted as the next best thing, mm-hmm. but most people won't use AI for much of anything.
Yeah. Siri, what's the weather going to be like tomorrow?
Right. And so my point is a wow moment goes across all people and all things, not just I have this one specialty and wow, this is a pretty cool thing. I'm talking about, you know, across it all, and we're not seeing that. Everybody listens to music. Everybody likes to have a nice phone. You know, everybody loved the idea of Windows and the mouse and all of the stuff that Xerox could have had. And
the peripherals.
Don't bother to go there.
Yeah.
But the point is that those were the wow moments because they went across the spectrum. Anyway, to the phones, our next caller is Bill. Our first caller is Bill from Greece, New York. Hiya, Bill. What's up?
Hello, guys. I'm thinking of buying a cheap laptop with a touch screen and a touchpad that I would like to try to put Linux on. I've read that you should look for a Linux with Wayland and maybe a GNOME desktop to work the best. But I'm wondering, do you know, is there actually a Linux that works really good with a touchscreen?
I happen to be using one at this moment. I'm running an Asus computer with a touchscreen and a touchpad. Both, well, I turned off the touchpad because it annoys me when I'm trying to type
here.
Those
of us that grew up with mice kind of hate the touchpad.
Right. I use touchpads on other laptops, but when I'm sitting here, the height of everything means that my thumb is always tapping on the touchpad. But I'm using Asus, I'm using Xubuntu, and it kind of immediately read everything. When I installed it, I thought, well, all right, I'm never going to use the touchpad, the touchscreen. This is never going to work. And then one day I was pointing to somebody to something, and I touched the screen, and the cursor went there. I said, I have a touchpad, touchscreen. So most hardware that's recent is understood by most versions of Linux.
And there are some laptops that come pre-installed with Linux in already, although installing Linux is kind of the part of the fun of it.
Right. So I would check the specs and one of the things you can say is, do a Google search that says, does the touchpad of the Asus blah, blah, blah work under Linux? And you will get an answer, I guarantee you.
Can you actually do something like play solitaire and move the cards on the touch screen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
Now, ironically, in your early days of the Macintosh, Steve Jobs famously said, who wants the gorilla arms of touching your screen all the time? But then later on came up with the iPad where you touch the screen all the time.
Right.
But you're not typing all the time on the screen with your hands up like that. You're tapping on something to activate that thing now.
Right. But yes, you can do that. I can tap and hold and move things around if I want to. And I can do that with cards, or I can do that with a window, or I can do that, you know, with pretty much anything.
Now your finger replaces the cursor.
Yeah, essentially. And it works just the way it does on a phone. In order to move something, you tap and hold for a second so that the screen understands you want to do more than just point out this thing. So you tap and hold for a second, and then you can drag. So it does take a little bit of coordination to learn to do that. But once you've done it a few times, you get it quick.
One of the tricky things is that both Windows and Mac, and I'm not completely sure about Linux, the targets on screen, the buttons and the dialogues and the things that you click with your mouse, are small to click with the mouse cursor. So trying to touch them with your finger can sometimes be tricky.
Especially if you got big hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would probably use a rubber tip stylus.
I was about to say you can use a rubber tip stylus, and there are also Linux, unlike Mac and Windows, lets you change the look of the screen of the desktop very easily. And there are modes, there are desktop themes that have that are designed for touchscreen. They have large buttons.
That was the Windows 8 interface that everyone hated because no one had touchscreens yet.
Right.
Yeah, well, I'm looking. I'm an El Cheapo, and I love Woot, and I'm looking at an HP 11-inch laptop that's got a 360-degree screen to it, so it can be like a tablet.
Yeah.
Like $100. It's got an i5 chip in it and 8 gigs of RAM, and it comes with Windows 10, and I'm thinking of just wiping Windows 10 off of it.
You need to stop talking. I have an addiction. I have an addiction to Woot laptops. Stop talking.
It's 154 laptops on Woot right now.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you. I have an addiction. Every once in a while, I feel like I need a new laptop. I don't. I have two right now. How many laptops does one human need? I have two.
Depends on how many floors in the house you have.
And that doesn't count my desktop. And that doesn't count the Chromebooks. And that doesn't count my desktop. I have an addiction. I admit it. But, Bill, I tell you what. I'm ashamed at the number of laptops I bought from Woot that I put Linux on. And it worked perfectly on every one of them. As long as the hardware wasn't dead.
I guess I'll give it a try. You know, it's only $100. What the heck? And I can always try more than one distribution.
That's just it. If you find you can play with distributions until you find the one that you like and does everything you want right away.
Well, since 1995, I've installed, modified, and broken 387 Linux distributions.
All right. You're on a roll.
Don't stop now. You're doing great. Back. What?
I got the arrows in my back.
Yep, exactly right. Don't stop
but
now.
But isn't
you're on
it fun?
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, Bill. Yeah, that is the real beauty of Linux is that it's all free. So you can, you don't like a distribution, change it. Yeah. You don't like the way the screen looks, change it. You know, you can change not just colors and things like that, but everything.
Well, the other nice thing about Linux is that you can, you know, buy a few thumb drives. Thank you. And you can put different versions of Linux on it, plug it into it, into the laptop. Have it boot up, but not install. You do a test drive. So you can sit there and see if that flavor of Linux is good for you and try it out. If not, okay, you take that stick out, try a different one, and do the same thing. You can literally put it in and not have to install it.
Right, and overwrite the one that you didn't like and try a different one. They run slower from the thumb drive, but they run, and that's what counts because you're testing. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. And I do want to take a moment to thank everyone who was so kind and generous as to donate to us. We'll see you in just a couple of minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Dave from Irondequoit on the line. Hiya, Dave. What's up?
Hi, Nick. well, this is an ongoing situation. So with OpenOffice, and I installed this morning the 32-bit Java, J-R-E, and it's still not working. And I'm, you know, the first error message says OpenOffice requires Java runtime to perform the install. And then the second one says the connection to the data source could not be established. No Java installation could be found. If I go to tools in OpenOffice, and then go down to options and then go to Java, it says use a Java runtime environment. Java runtime environment's already installed. And then it gives a kind of a blank thing where you have to add, I guess, the directory to the JRE. When I do that, it keeps kind of saying, no, you've got the wrong folder.
One question, though, Dave. Let's back up for just 1 second. One, how old is this machine?
It's a brand new Lenovo.
Lenovo, yeah. Running Windows 11, I take it?
Oh, yeah.
And
I mean, we're talking...
Okay, how much memory?
Less than 2 months old.
How much memory?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Well, does when the installer runs, does it complete successfully, or do you get an error in the installer?
It's successful. I've installed Java and OpenOffice several times with restarts and all, and I'm kind of at wit's end.
All right, so you followed the instructions on both of those pages that I texted you.
I think I did. I tried to. Of course, it mostly is targets LibreOffice, and LibreOffice used the 64-bit, which I first tried and, of course, failed. So
you tried. I'm sorry. Let me go back just a bit. You tried LibreOffice running those pages I sent you, and that did not work?
No, I haven't tried LibreOffice at all. I'm kind of sticking with OpenOffice.
Why?
That's what I put on the desktop.
Why not try doing the other, just
here's
for tickles and grins?
OpenOffice is a... good program, but LibreOffice is a fork of it. It's open source. It's 64-bit, which is going to match Windows much better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's newer and has better features.
Okay.
So my suggestion is, well, OpenOffice, you know, originally it was StarOffice, and that was closed source. I actually have a box, an unopened box of StarOffice. StarOffice. So StarOffice was a product from Apache, and it was closed source and very proprietary. And then they created OpenOffice, which was still closed source. Well, excuse me, which was open source, and that was nice, but it didn't offer. It was well behind the feature set of Microsoft Office. So the Open Document Foundation took OpenOffice and created LibreOffice, which is much, much, much closer to Microsoft Office in its feature set and is also 64-bit, so it will run much faster on a new Windows machine.
Yeah, because it's going to take advantage of all the things that were built into Windows 11. 11 stepped up the game. That's why we've said, you know, folks going from 10 to 11 on the older machines, it might not be the best thing. But if you're running on a brand new machine with Windows 11 And, you know, you do the 64-bit. Most of the programs nowadays are going 64-bit, and Windows 11 will take advantage of that and give you all the horsepower and performance that will make a more a better experience using different products.
In addition, LibreOffice is available in the Windows Store, so it's a one-click install.
Oh, okay.
So well, that might be better for you.
I also posted a link from the OpenOffice Wiki on what to do if Java's installed but not recognized.
Well, you convinced me to go to LibreOffice, but I just have one question. The nice thing that I see on OpenOffice is that it has a database. I need a database and word processor, basically.
And LibreOffice has that.
Both have it. Okay. Even Google Docs has it.
Right. So LibreOffice has LibreOffice Base, which is their database, and LibreOffice Writer, which is their word processor, and LibreOffice, I think, Sheets, which is their spreadsheets, and then Impress, which is their PowerPoint presentation package. So it's got all of the things that you would get. Well, it's got more than you would get with Microsoft Office because it also has a database.
Yeah, definitely, yeah, okay.
And it looks like OpenOffice was last updated in 2014.
Right, and OpenOffice has been fairly well abandoned for LibreOffice anyway.
And that may be why it's not working on a Windows 11 machine.
Yeah, because it's not taking advantage of the
right. So, Dave, the first thing you need to do is uninstall OpenOffice.
Right.
And then you can install LibreOffice. And the easiest way to do it, the absolute easiest way to do it, is through the Microsoft Store. Open the Microsoft Store, search for LibreOffice, L-I-B-R-E Office. And
right.
And off you go.
Okay. Thank you very much. Very timely information. I'm trying to get this done for the food cupboard. And
yep.
It's one thing after another sometimes.
Oh, believe me.
Always.
Always something.
All right.
Yeah, really. Okay, thank you very much, guys.
Yep, have fun. You get a Writer, which is word processing, Calc, which is a spreadsheet, Impress, which is presentations, Draw, which does vector graphics and flowcharts, and Base, which does databases, and Math, which does formula editing. And it's all free.
I'm looking at a timeline of all the different branches and forks, which is quite impressive to begin with. But I hadn't realized that IBM Symphony was a fork of OpenOffice.
Oh, yeah.
And then they forked back into Apache Office.
Right. Right. And like Steve said, OpenOffice hasn't really been updated since 2014.
Yeah.
So if you're going to choose one, choose LibreOffice, which updates much more regularly and is has a 64-bit version.
And Windows 11 is looking for that. It does, right. You know, it has problems dealing with older programs that aren't 64-bit because that's the whole premise of Windows 11 was more power, more speed.
Well, to get
do your things that you want to do that are built on 64-bit.
And to get really geeky about it, there's an entire state change that happens if you're running 64-bit programs and then you want to run a 32-bit program. What happens is the chip inside has to remove all of the 64-bit programs from itself.
Yep.
And then
switch
over to 32-bit, and that's called a state change, and then it has to do it again to go back from 32 to 64-bit. Now, when you are multitasking, it does that thousands of times a second. That really slows your machine down.
Apple handled it a little different. You cannot run 32-bit apps, period, anything. 64-bit only.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Greece, New York. What's up, Gary?
Hi, guys.
Hiya.
I got a problem with Chrome browser.
Yep.
Every time I click on a link, it opens up a new tab.
and a new tab and a new tab, and it just keeps going on and on and on. How do I stop it from opening up a new tabs?
Wait, you click once and you get hundreds of new tabs?
Yeah.
Virus or spyware.
Or every time you click, you get a new tab.
Right, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, okay, it's one of those two things.
I'm sorry.
Either you click once and get 100 new tabs, or you click once and get one new tab.
One new tab.
Okay.
Yeah. That's easy.
That's what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
Well, but you get to choose that.
Is there a preference somewhere? Yeah.
In settings. Yes, right. Settings, you go into upper right-hand corner, there's the dot. You can scroll down, drop down menu, and then there's in settings. You can then go to screen. I think it's.
It says go to search and say where results open. I'm in the in the Google Help.
Right.
Well,
and you can open in a new browser window or in a current tab.
Right. Okay.
I will post this link in a moment.
Yeah, I've been using Vivaldi, which is a lot better than Chrome, but sometimes I want to go back to Chrome for, you know, just stuff, but Vivaldi's really, really, I'm really satisfied with that one.
Oh, yes, Vivaldi's a very fine product.
Mm-hmm. So I'll give that a try.
All right, I think it's under, no, I guess I don't know where it is. I used to know where it was.
Well, under, if you go into the settings, on it says on startup.
Yes.
You can sit there, and in there you can say open a specific page.
Well, no, he doesn't want the startup tab. He wants he clicks a link.
Right.
It's opening in a new tab.
Or the same tab. Or the same window. Or, you know what I mean? Maybe I'm not making myself clear.
So. Yeah, all right. So what you want to do is...
So that article's out of date. Let me find the right
article. Wait a minute. Isn't that an extension these days?
There used to be. I know Firefox has one, but Chrome, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's an extension. Did you add an extension to do that?
No.
Check to see that there isn't one.
Okay.
The extension should probably be called something like open a new tabs to the front, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Tabs to the front V2, I think.
Let's see. This one says go to Advanced System Tab Management. I hate when these articles are not dated.
Yeah, I know, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see what system... No, I've set all mine to do it. How did I do it? I used to run tabs to the front.
But one of the other problems is every tab is its own sandbox, which is good from a web point of view, but it's bad because it eats up extra memory.
Right.
So that's out of date. It's in there somewhere. Chrome flags experimental tab opening. Let me try that one. Tab opening. Tear off web tabs? No, that's
not it's an extension. It's an extension. I don't think.
Now you may want to go through your list of extensions and remove the ones you don't recognize or disable the ones that might be doing it temporarily.
Yeah. All right. No problem. Thanks.
Chrome settings for tab management. It says it's in settings, advanced system startup. No, that's for startup. Advanced system tab management. And this one is dated October 24. maybe because I'm on Mac Chrome, and that's different than Windows Chrome, which is different than Linux Chrome.
Yeah, well,
that
should,
that shouldn't that. Be.
Yeah, there's an extension for open a new tab.
See, I have to use a command key. It opens in the same tab unless I hold down a key, which I like because I usually want them in the same tab.
Right. Well, now, wait. Hold on. Is Gary still on the line?
No.
Gary, you there?
No, he's gone.
Okay. If you're talking about in Google when you do a search, then that's a setting in Google Search. So that's in Google Settings, which is a separate thing. Under Search Settings, you can change how that works. But there's no.
I see a lot of people have been asking this question for years. How do I stop Chrome from opening new tabs every time?
Well, I know I did it. I just can't remember at the moment how I did it.
Google search settings where results. It's a Google setting, not a
for Google,
not a Chrome
yes.
setting.
For Google, that's true. But if I were to go to, for example, one of my own, sites, and just click on something, yeah. So yes, it's in Google's own settings. So you would not be looking in
Chrome.
You would go to Google's homepage. And change the setting there.
At the bottom of the window on the Google.com page, there's a settings command that I never noticed before.
Right.
At the bottom of the window. And it's in there. Let me post that link.
There's a settings command that I never noticed before.
Yeah. If you go to other settings, one of the choices under desktop is results in a new window. And that's currently on. It may be defaulted to on.
Yeah. If you go to other settings.
But that's only for Google. That's only for Google searches. So if he's having a problem with every page, that's something different.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Google has too many things. Microsoft has too many things. They've renamed the mail client in Windows to Outlook again.
Yeah.
So now it's not Windows Mail or Windows Live Mail or Windows Hotmail. It's Windows Outlook Mail. But Outlook is their commercial mail program. And they're even now, some places they're calling their Exchange back-end server, they're calling the Outlook server.
Right.
So they really like that name. Did they pay a lot of money for the trademark to the word Outlook?
Maybe consolidating, probably.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of Outlook, we had this week in Apple. Now we're going to have this week in Microsoft. Microsoft had a week too, not because they had any major announcements, but just because they're Microsoft and stuff happens. Let's start with the one that affects so many of you. If you want to delay the switch from Windows 10 to Windows 11, it'll cost you $30. You heard that right. Windows 10 home users can delay the switch to Windows 11 for one more year if they're willing to pay $30 for extended security updates.
Now, this is end users now?
Yeah, this is end users.
Enterprise users couldn't have been able to do that for a while.
Yes. Windows 10 will reach the end of support on October 14th, 2025. After that date, Windows 10 systems will no longer receive bug fixes or security updates patching newly discovered vulnerabilities and defending them from the latest security threats. Given that you're running Windows, that's a bad idea. Very bad. According to Yusuf Mehdi, Microsoft Executive Vice President and Consumer Chief Marketing Officer, The extended security updates or ESU program for consumers will be a one-year option available for $30. Program enrollment will be available closer to the end of support in 2025. Microsoft's going to get your money one way or the other. And that's not a small amount either. StatCounter Global Stats data shows over 62% of all Windows users are still running Windows 10, while only 33% run Windows 11 3 years after its launch.
Well, some of them, like mine that I just got, what, the machine is only maybe 7-8 months old? It already comes up and says, sorry, this machine does not qualify or meet the standards for Windows 11.
And so if you want to keep it secure, it'll only cost you $30.
No,
it's only good for 1 year.
That one will then become a Linux machine.
Exactly. Microsoft advises home users who want to switch before Windows 10 reaches the end of support to check if their PC can be upgraded to Windows 11 and buy a new Windows 11 PC if not, because you've got money to burn, right?
Mm-hmm.
This also means that the 3-year extension that businesses can pay for is not available to home users. 1 year and out. On the plus side, Microsoft has fixed a known issue that prevents some apps from launching in non-administrative accounts from starting on Windows 11 22H2 systems after installing the September preview cumulative update. On the minus side, Windows 11 Task Manager shows the wrong number of processes running. Something as simple as that, and they cannot get it right. Down to zero in some cases, which is never correct. So are you confused enough yet? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
I think they're still going to wind up buckling.
Well, in the business one, doesn't it double the second year and triple the third year?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Maybe they'll do that. Maybe they'll do that in a year for home users.
Yeah, the point is they want people on Windows 11 because you have to pay for Windows 11 and they need the money. Because they only have billions in the bank.
Yeah,
and it does, in a small arena, make it easier for programmers to know everyone's on the same OS.
Exactly. And although Windows 10 and Windows 11 use almost identical calls for everything, so it's not that big a deal for the programmer. But
I've seen some ridiculous websites that have if Safari do this, if Internet Explorer do this, if Opera do this, it's...
Not anymore.
Yeah, it's almost gone these days.
Yeah. But people are tired of the upgrade treadmill that Windows has always been on.
And then the abandonment.
Well, and Apple does that too, but apparently nobody cares on the Apple side. I don't understand that. And Apple not only says you can't run this operating system anymore, you can't run this computer anymore. We've entirely changed the chip on it, and you can't do the old stuff anymore.
People just stick with the old stuff,
I guess.
And then they get infected with something, or they can't run the software they want. And now suddenly, if you'd have bought the new stuff over the last 10 years, it would have spread it out. Now you got to pay the $2,000 up front.
We will soon be at the point where if you tell me you're running a Windows 10 machine, our response will be, we can't help you. Not that we don't want to help you.
Go to Linux.
We can't help you.
Yep.
There's just no support any longer. There's nothing you can do to fix that machine.
And the annoying thing is they take the tech notes away. They take the update files away. There's no reason. It's just a hard drive.
Right.
$100 for another terabyte drive. 100 for probably three or four terabyte drive now at their volume.
Right. Exactly right. They don't even notice the disk space, but they take it away because that forces you to upgrade. All right, that music tells us that the first hour of this show is in the history books, but do not despair. There's an entire another hour of the longest-running computer show coming your way. Another hour of Dave Enright, another hour of Steve Ray, another hour of me, and another hour of Nick Francesco, and another hour of your phone calls, which you can do by giving us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. It's safe to do so. We're done with the pledge drive. But we're going to be back in just a few minutes with a whole lot more sound bites. So take a bio break, get yourself a beverage, but come on back, and we will see you in just a couple of minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. And for those of you who didn't catch the first hour, we have a few announcements. The old archives are done. We've got them all up there. There are 27 of them. Thank you once again to Don Nichols' widow for giving us those. Don recorded them. Some of them are 40 years old.
It's great to have those memories, though, that, you know, we were able to have somebody that still had them. And maybe they're not the stereo quality, but at least they're captured moments.
Right.
That just
and,
like
and
we.
There are a couple that I couldn't get up because the tapes, the tape broke or whatever the reason was. They, like I said, they're 40 years old. But we got a majority of them up, and they're done, and you can download them at the archive site.
Well, it's no different than the photos. You know, somebody took the time to capture these, because those are moments that we could, the three of us could never get back, because I don't have the copies, nor Steve or you, that somebody else had up that we can now, like a precious photo, put up there, and other folks can enjoy, even though they're brief moments.
Right. It's also, this is the weekend we turn the clocks back.
Fall back.
For most of us, that's not going to be a problem because it's automatic, but it does mean that our cars are now correct for the next 6 months or wrong for the next 6 months, depending on when you bought it. It's also Daniel Boone's birthday. It's also, I have to say, I lost a crown. So there will be times where I just stop talking because I've bitten my tongue. And I apologize for that, and I'm lisping a little more than I usually do because of it, but hopefully I get that fixed.
Yeah, that's one thing. Like, for me, I've got a big grandfather clock that I built. That's a pain in the butt that I got to sit there and stop it.
Springing ahead is easier.
Oh, yeah, but when I got to fall back, what I do is I take the egg timer. Set it for an hour, go over, turn the clock off, you know, stop the pendulum from going, and then setting the clock right in front of me so I hear it.
Yep. No, I get it.
Because one time I made the mistake of setting the stupid egg timer on the lip of the clock, figuring, oh, I'll hear it. No, I didn't.
No, you didn't. But I've got a one button. A couple of buttons that I press on my car, and I've actually so far, at least, I'm sure it won't do it now, but up until now I've had them memorized, so that was nice.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as far as your home goes, clearly every electronic device you've got, your phone, your computer, whatever, will make the change automatically. But be aware that it's happening, and that. You know, we've had a number of laws proposed to do away with daylight savings time, and none of them have passed so far, at least.
At least both houses. There's one right. There's one that passed through the Senate, but then the House has not even looked at it.
Right. So, well, the House this year, but yeah. So both houses. That's why.
There's one that passed through the Senate, but then the House.
I don't know where this
pavilion.
Is. Oh, pavilion. There's no R in Pavilion. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Pavilion, New York. Hi, Brian. What's up?
Gentlemen.
Who came in?
Ah, ha, ha. We do that every week.
Exactly.
It never gets old, though.
No, it never does.
I'm telling you.
Yes, yes, it does.
Don't. Not for me, it doesn't. That's all that matters.
That's all that matters.
I paid for that.
Yes, you did.
That's right. No, actually, quit picking on the dyslexic guy, man. I've had dyslexia all my life. You know what?
Join the crowd.
You know what, brother? I'm with you.
Yep. Okay, what's up, Brian?
Actually, in regards to your guy who called earlier about experimenting with Linux on his touchpads, things like that.
Right.
For like an extra $100, you can go to the used market and get yourself a nice refurb, like a nice Lenovo laptop. Some really nice stuff for not a lot of money.
Well, it's kind of what Woot does. A lot of the things on Woot are already refurbed.
Yep.
But it's not, Woot too for sure. There's a couple retailers out there, and I've had tremendous experience buying used computers, a corporate closeouts, things like that. I got a real nice Lenovo ThinkPad or a Pro level, and it has all the numbers. But the thing is, if you want to experiment like a full blown computer, just order a refurb, comes completely guaranteed, and order a small hard drive with it. Pop the Windows hard drive out, put your blank one in, and play with Linux all you want at real time, real speed.
Right. If you want to save the Windows install, that's the way to do it. You can also, if you're just testing, as Dave said earlier, you can throw Linux on a thumb drive and try it from there. If you're using USB-A, it's going to be a slow load, but it'll run okay.
Exactly, and I've done that before. And that can be a little frustrating. It doesn't give you a real taste for how it works, but the hard drive, drive space is so cheap these days.
Right.
You can get in there and not let yourself down. And then if you don't like it, go back to your Windows if you have to have it. And, you can move on from there.
And you don't need, and if particularly for testing, you don't need a particularly large hard drive.
Not at all. No.
Right. So, 128 gig will do you.
Easily.
If you could even find one that small anymore.
I know. What are they like? Maybe $30 tops, and it comes with the same shipping payload, so you're not paying extra to have it when you order it with your new laptop or your refurb laptop.
Right.
So that's cool. I just thought I'd weigh in and tell you that I love you guys for sure. I was able to rejoin last week. I'm so proud.
You should be. Thank you.
I am. I'm boisterous. I'm my chest is puffed, and my tail feathers have grown back.
Clearly, you are taller and smarter. Your teeth are whiter, and you're sexier. Well done.
Like that was ever possible in the first place. Well, take care, guys, man. And glad that things worked out, and glad you're still on the air.
Thank you, Brian. We appreciate it. Have fun.
Take care.
You too. Yeah, you can. The refurbs. Now, what Bill from Greece was talking about was Woot. Woot.com, and they do they're a subsidiary of Amazon, so they have a lot of things that frankly don't move as well on Amazon as they'd like them to, or they have surpluses from Amazon, so they often have laptops. They also often have some this was a Woot laptop, and it was ages ago because it was a Windows 8 machine. That's how long ago this was. And I put Linux on it, and I've been using it at the show ever since. It works great every week. All my laptops are Woot refurbs, every one of them. In fact, my wife had a brand new computer that died. I gave her one of my Woot refurbs.
Mm-hmm.
Works like a top. Perfect.
And she's happy. That's all that counts.
Yep, and you get, you get a refurbished laptop with a guarantee for however long the guarantee is for, and you're on a check. Sometimes it's 6 months, sometimes it's 3 months, sometimes it's a year. But you get that, and I had a problem with one, and I told them, I cannot use this. It was a refurb, and it came in with the BIOS locked. So I could not put Linux on it.
Oh.
All I could do was run the Windows installation that was on it.
Oh, hell no.
And hell no. So I wrote to them and said, here's my issue. I would like to return this. They said, not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
He took it back. They gave me my money back because I was in the It was less than 10 days, so it was not a problem for them to return it, to take the return. So they've been very good. So I do a lot of shopping on Woot, a great deal, and they have really nice stuff. All right, news. While you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. The FBI and the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA or CISA, have disclosed that Chinese hackers breached commercial telecommunication services providers in the United States.
For years.
The breached entities have been warned, and the agencies are proactively alerting other potential targets of the elevated cyber activity. As the investigation is currently underway, not much information has been shared with the public. At the start of the month, it was revealed that a Chinese hacking group tracked as Salt Typhoon had breached multiple U.S. broadband providers, including Verizon, AT&T, and Lumen Technologies. The operation's goal appears to be espionage, and the hackers gained access to a communications interception system major telecoms maintained to accommodate lawful crime investigation requests by the authorities. While it is expected that the United States will be targeted by elevated cyber and espionage activity given the upcoming presidential elections and the culmination of influence operations, it's noteworthy that similar operations also target Canada. The government announced on Friday that state-sponsored threat actors from China have been performing broad network scans over the last couple of months, targeting a wide spectrum of organizations. Canada noted, however, that these scans are limited to reconnaissance and do not constitute security breaches on the mentioned entities. Yet, still, its statement aims to remind important organizations in the country to implement strict security measures, including multi-factor authentication, protection, logging, traffic monitoring, and anti-phishing training. Still think you're secure? Give us a call, if you dare. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. We know that there have been a number of Russian and Chinese hacking groups attacking the United States in various forms, whether it's disinformation on social media, whether it's hacking into government databases, whether it's attacking the infrastructure like this talked about with the service providers. We know that that's happening, and we've got people who spend all day fighting it. That's what they do.
Yep, it's their job.
But it's hard. It's you know, we talk about the game of leapfrog, but it's more than that, because it's not just leapfrog over what you can see. You have to leapfrog over what you can't see.
And it's a moving target. That's the whole problem. Exactly. I mean, a lot of these folks, they set up these mobile offices, and they could be in one center, one part of a town one time, then turn around, move. And
there's not a lot we can do to them if they are out of the country.
Third world.
There's a sneaky new one coming along where you get contacted by someone out of the country who wants you to apply for a job, a coding job usually, and they will do all the work for a 20% cut of the pay. And there have been a couple of dozen apparently reported cases of North Korean state-sponsored hackers working in a U.S. company by doing that.
Yep.
Figuring, and so someone else does the interview, the person gets hired, and then the company ships them a remote laptop, because it's a real big deal now to work remote. And it turns out that's basically a call center where the laptop gets plugged in and they VPN in from North Korea to attack from the inside.
Mm-hmm. For many years, for the 2 years during the pandemic, my daughter had three laptops in her house. Two laptops and a desktop. I was so proud. Because she was working, she had her own desktop for playing, but she was working two separate jobs, mm-hmm. both distance. Each one of them sent her a laptop. So she'd do something on this one, and while she was waiting for her response, she'd do something on this one. While she's waiting for a response, she'd do something on the first one. And so she was working two full-time jobs during the pandemic, God bless her.
You used to say some of your people at RIT, they get a grant for this thing, they get a computer to do that thing, and they get another grant, get another computer for that. You'd run out of Ethernet jacks in the office.
We'd run out of Ethernet jacks. And mm-hmm. the reason is that it's safer and easier to be able, because a lot of these are government contracts, and they want to make sure they're secure. Well, this is the only thing running on this machine. It is therefore secure.
Yep.
If I had one machine that I was running three different projects on, there could be crossover in some way. None of those three people want that to happen, those three companies.
Especially freelancers can end up working for competitors.
Right.
We have a lot of our video type customers will have a different hard drive for every customer. So I record all their stuff, do all their work on this hard drive, and I don't mix up my customers. Because we've done that before. I have worked for competitors.
Yeah.
And so there was one story I read years ago, I think it was Kodak and Xerox. Someone inside Kodak emailed a bunch of source code to someone at Xerox. And they thought it was this big industrial espionage thing. And it was only noticed because it was gigabytes of data.
Right.
You don't email gigabytes of data. You take it on the flash drive.
Right? No. Yeah. Right.
So they stopped it down. Turns out it was a contract worker was leaving one contract and was getting ready to go to another contract and submitted their resume, basically. Their coding. When you work for a company, the code you write there is their code. You mm-hmm. don't have, unless yep. you get prior
approval
of putting right. it in your code book. But yeah, it was just so funny.
Throw it on a thumb drive.
Yeah.
I realized, however, there's a problem. When I was doing these old archives,
mm-hmm.
I was recording them on my laptop because I could. I have too many microphones on my desktop. I always didn't turn one off, so I'd have to re-copy something. So I did it on the laptop, and it's one microphone. I could turn that off. And then I would put it on a thumb drive and move it on the other machine. The problem is, my desktop is black. My desk is black. The computer was black. The thumb drive was black. I spent more time looking for the friggin' thumb drive than doing anything else.
No blinking lights.
Next time I buy thumb drives, I'm buying pink ones. They're going to be pink.
Or, you know what you can do? You can get the black ones because you can get them yep. cheap. But what you do is you go over to like a Home Depot or that, and you get electrical tape.
Yes.
And they got small strips with different colors. And you can wrap it around once, and, the orange sticks out quite a bit.
Well, what I eventually did was when I opened one of the tape boxes, it had the little extra tape things. Remember, we used to be able yep. to replace mm-hmm. those little strips, and they're just the right size. So I cut it in half so it would go, and it fit perfectly. So then I was fine. But there was that time at the beginning where I kept laying the thumb drive down on the laptop and losing it.
Yep.
Yeah. Well,
they're so small, too.
Well, and that's the other thing. They're the size of my thumbnail.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've got the problem of my coax is coming down into my ham shack, and the cable is all
ouch
black.
Yeah.
So you try to figure out which one is which.
Yeah.
So what I did is literally they sell it, and it's a little package. And it's got all this electric tape, and it's got yellow and blue and green and, various bright colors, fluorescent green. So what I did is on each antenna wire cable coming down, I put a different color on it.
Yeah.
So that when I went on up into the attic, I added that color so I knew where that antenna was going. So if I had to work on an antenna, I know what freaking one I was working on because it's all black cabling.
Well, I just helped a friend redesign his entire computer room, and we labeled every cable. At both ends.
And as the future tech, bless you.
And, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that, you know that this plug is for the Chromebox, the Asus Chromebox. And then the other end, there's a little tab that says Asus Chromebox.
Yep.
So you can't plug it into the wrong thing. Every single wire was that. And then we lost one of the wires. It had gotten tangled up under a chair. But we We knew we had gotten it because we had labeled it. Where was it?
Yeah. Yeah, it just makes life easier because, you know, it can get confusing.
I was doing that. I had to do that this week for a customer. There was like a 300-foot underground Ethernet wire that wasn't working. Well, it's gray at this end. Hopefully, it'll be gray at the other end.
Yeah.
A lot of the wires were labeled, but they were handwritten, and you couldn't read the handwriting anymore.
Or blurred, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and here's the other thing. He bought a brand new printer, a nice Canon printer, very nice Canon printer. We set it up, followed the instructions. The instructions are like, there's three things you have to do. I did the three things that wouldn't connect. I did the three things that wouldn't connect. I did the three things that wouldn't connect. I looked online. They gave me six other things to try. I tried all six things. It wouldn't work. I went back to try the three things again. Worked perfectly. Ah!
Timing issue?
Come on! Then, in the back of the pamphlet, you read, may not connect wirelessly if the internal battery is not charged. So plug your printer in for 24 hours before you try to connect it.
Why does a printer have a battery?
I have no idea, but that's what it said.
To keep the date and time, probably same way your computer does.
Yeah. So what clearly happened was it wasn't charged up enough.
Mm-hmm. And you spent so much time futzing with it.
That it charged up enough, just enough to work fine.
Just get, you know, that 5% or so into it, and then it can be happier than a pig in mud, and away it goes.
But who wants a printer that you have to wait 24 hours to print with? I don't like that.
That doesn't...
The other big thing you have to watch out now for is printers that require an internet connection, so they can send you ads.
Right.
And you're forced to subscribe to their ink plan. So every month you get a new ink tank, whether you want it or not.
I have the choice of the ink plan with my brother's printer, but I said no.
Yeah.
I print like four sheets a week.
Yeah. There's several printers from the big companies that have, usually it's a too cheap model. We had a customer bought like a laser printer for $99. Requires an internet connection, requires a toner subscription.
Right. So you can get ads and so you...
Yeah.
Right, because that's...
We returned that one. She got one from us.
Yeah.
That doesn't require that anymore.
Right. So, be aware that, you know, and we've seen that with inexpensive everythings. Why are they inexpensive? Because you're paying for it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
That's one nice thing about a bunch of the companies have started doing large ink tanks. So you look your inkjet printer, you look at that little half a milliliter thing of ink that's $20, and that works out to like $5,000 a gallon. So now a bunch of the printer companies have bigger tanks that you pour more ink into. That it used to be such a mess doing that. Powdered toner. There's memes going around where in front of the toner, in front of the copier, there's a huge cloud of black toner, except for two footprints where someone was standing when the toner.
Those are not just memes. I have seen that happen.
Yes.
I've had that almost done to me.
I was at a lawyer's office doing a service call, and I go by, you know, because inadvertently where the big copier was also the center area where all the coax would, you know, connectors would be, you know, the hub and that. And I go in there and I'm doing some service work on that. And she's sitting there changing the toner and she's shaking it, and then goes to pull the tab on it. She's standing there and all of a sudden this big puff of black.
You got to shake it a little bit. Some contents may settle during shipping.
There was something wrong with the toner that it was literally all coming out this black toner.
I've been doing this for how many years and I still get a little bit of trepidation every time I pull that little tab.
Yeah, pulled it out and all of a sudden all this black.
Oh, yes, every single time.
So you're throwing away so much plastic and gears and mechanism when you replace your toner. If you could pour more toner in it, that would be cheaper, but we gave up on that because there were so many toner messes everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, she just stood there and didn't know what to do.
And that's why the whole idea of the solid state toner came in, right? When you had dye sub printers, the
crayons.
Or
why
the
can't
crayons.
Why can't a laser printer actually write on the paper with the laser? A laser printer charges the drum to draw the toner particles in. I'd just make the laser write on the paper.
Well, because you couldn't double side it for one thing.
But the solid ink printers and dye sub printers.
Where the way you change it is you just take a block of what looks like a kind of a waxy substance and stick it in. It's done. It just looks like a crayon with no wrapper around it. Or it might be square, but it still looks like a crayon, and those are easy. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You can call us at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. See you in a few.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can call us at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. It's safe to call us again because the pledge drive is over.
Mm-hmm.
A large-scale malicious operation named Emerald Whale, it's all one word, scanned for exposed Git configuration files to steal over 15,000 cloud account credentials from thousands of private repositories.
That is a large whale.
It is a large Git is a code repository system used by over 100 million developers, including some of the largest. It allows developers on the same team to share proprietary code easily and quickly, and for open source code, allows anyone who's interested in the code to download it. According to Sysdig, who discovered the campaign, the operation involved using automated tools that scanned IP ranges for exposed Git configuration files, which may include authentication tokens. These tokens are then used to download repositories stored on GitHub, GitLab, and Bitbucket, which are scanned for further credentials. The stolen data were exfiltrated to Amazon S3 buckets of other victims and were subsequently used in phishing and spam campaigns and sold directly to other cyber criminals. While exposing Git authentication tokens can allow data theft, it could also lead to full-blown data breaches like we recently saw with the Internet Archive. Git configuration files are used to define various options like repository paths, branches, remotes, and sometimes even authentication information like API keys, access tokens, and passwords. Developers might include these secrets in private repositories for convenience, making data transmissions and API interactions easier without configuring or performing authentication each time. This is not risky as long as the repository is appropriately isolated from public access. However, if the directory containing the configuration file is mistakenly exposed on a website, threat actors using scanners could easily locate and read them. If these stolen configuration files contain authentication tokens, they can be used to download associated source code, databases, and other confidential resources not intended for public access. Based on the collected data, Emerald Whale stole 15,000 cloud credentials from 67,000 URLs that exposed configuration files. Of the exposed URLs, 28,000 corresponded to Git repositories, 6,000 were GitHub tokens, and a notable 2,000 were validated as active credentials. The researchers note that this campaign isn't particularly sophisticated, relies on commodity tools and automation, yet still managed to steal thousands of secrets that could potentially lead to catastrophic data breaches. Scared yet? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415.
It's almost not news anymore. Every week there's another massive breach.
Yeah.
All your data is already out there. There's nothing you can do about it.
Equally importantly, when people call and say, you know, what can I do to keep my data secure? Well, nothing. You know, there are things you should do, but, you know, if they're coming at you from your end, there are things you can do to protect yourself. But if they're coming from the other end, there's nothing you can do. I once, a guy called me and said, you know, I need to share this repository with you for a job I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And he shared it with me, and it had the login credentials for the root owner of the entire organization.
Jeez.
because that was the easiest thing for him to do while he was testing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to know this information.
Easy.
I am deleting this file, and you will change that password right now.
Easy
I do not want to know this.
Easy is convenient. It's never safe.
Yep. Right, right.
Well, that's the one thing right now where I work. The number of folks that are coming in and saying that they've had their credit cards breached because they're still using the old swipe method instead of using the chip.
Well, or they're handing their card to the lowest paid workers in America.
Yeah, and they're getting breached like nobody's business.
And it's usually not at that point where the breach occurs. It's later on in the process, some company that handles credit card data got breached.
Right.
Which is why both Nick and I like the Apple Pay and Google Pay, where whenever whenever you pay for something, they get a random credit card number.
This is paying with your phone.
When you tap your phone instead,
it's a random number, which is associated with your credit card for that one transaction. You can steal that one all you want. The transaction's already occurred, and that number is no longer any good.
Yeah, well, that's what I finally set my wife up with, because twice she went to Jersey Mike's and swiped her card. Both times, and this was, months apart, her card got compromised.
Yep.
Matter of fact, the last one was they got her for $71 down in Albany.
My first one was 6 fur coats in Miami, Florida. I got a call from my bank. Did you just buy 6 fur coats in Miami, Florida? No. Oddly, I did not. No.
So, yeah, I switched her to the tap to pay. Little Google, because she's got a Pixel phone too, and put it in the wallet, and now she loves it. Just sit there, and it's far more secure. And I've been trying to tell folks, go to the chip, put it on your phone, because there's the wallet on there that you can put it in.
Now, that is still, again, as we were saying, that is not to say that they won't steal your real credit card number from the other end if your bank gets breached.
Yep.
But what you can do every day to secure yourself is important, and you should be doing it.
Just helps, keep yourself a little more secure, because they're constantly trying to find ways to steal your information. That's their goal.
Yep.
A lot of credit card companies already have what they're called virtual credit cards.
Right.
So check with the credit card companies you used. And there's a couple of companies that offer virtual credit cards. If you don't want to use the Google one or the Apple one, you've already got on your phone.
Right.
Well, that's one other thing I found with my bank that I didn't realize, because they just updated the app. And I can go into the app now, and they have a feature there that they show the card, and I can turn it on and turn it off whenever I want.
Yeah. And you can put any number of cards you want into your digital wallet and pick which credit card you want without needing to physically carry them with you.
Yeah.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Irondequoit. What's up, Pat?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
But I got a couple simple ones for you here. I've got a Dell computer. It's about 4 or 5 years old. And every time I turn it on, it comes on a little different. So and it all depends on how long I hold the button in, the start button. And so at night, I always shut down and shut the computer off. In the morning, I get up, I want to start it up. I push the button, and if I hold it like for several seconds, I can see the light on my printer come on right away. But my screen, the computer screen, takes a while to come up, and sometimes it doesn't come up at all. And I have to shut it off, wait a couple of seconds, and then try again.
Do you use your computer daily?
I would say yes.
Then don't turn it off. Just turn the monitor off.
Well, most computers these days have a soft power switch.
Yeah.
The button on the front isn't the actual physical power button. And holding it in for more than a second does other things. Usually holding the power button in for 3 or 4 seconds forces the computer to power off.
Yeah.
Which crashing it if it's stuck. So you may be pushing it turns it on, but then holding it turns it off again. So
holding it too long.
Maybe holding it too long.
But no, seriously.
Or it puts it into a diagnostic mode by holding the power button down.
But seriously, though, like Nick, and I know Nick does and I do, we leave ours on 24/7. The only thing we do is turn off the monitor.
And
it's less wear and
tear. And they go to sleep to save power, too.
Yeah, they're less wear and tear on the components that shutting down and then starting back up and then shutting down and then starting back up. Just leave it on and turn the monitor off.
Okay, well, that's the first time I've ever heard that. I was advised earlier, years ago, that it was, you could be hacked at night.
Well, yes and no.
Yes, but it's always night somewhere.
Right.
So you can be hacked at their night, and it's your day.
Yep. Right.
Yes, yes.
So do you have solid-state drives or spinning drives?
Solid-state.
Yeah, so you don't even have moving parts.
Yeah.
So leaving it on 24/7 is not a big deal. And think about your light bulbs. When do they blow? They blow when you turn them on.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is the thermal shock.
The heating and cooling
surge
cycles.
Of power.
Right. You put a surge of power through cold components. It heats them up super fast. If they're weak, they blow. If you leave your computer on all the time, you don't have thermal shock, and you're better off.
But you're wearing the components out.
Well, but unless they're solid state components, in which case there's no moving parts, the wear is minimal.
Yep. Right.
Yep.
I've heard that too about electronic devices, turning them on and off.
Right.
So, you know, that makes sense. That's good to know. Okay, well, maybe I'll start doing that.
But you may want to check the manual for your specific computer and see what holding the power button does.
Right.
Most of the time it turns it off, but so that could be. And that's why it can take longer to eventually come back on, is because now it's off instead of just asleep. Or it turned off inappropriately, so it's got to run check disk, you know, behind the Windows logo or something like that.
Yeah, something else is going on. And I've been trying to time it just to see, you know. And so now I try not to hold it in so long. I just hit it like I think it should be an appropriate amount of time and then release.
Right.
And,
so,
you know, it works.
Yeah, so if you leave it on all the time, you can put on a screensaver. Some of those will turn off the monitor, so then you just need to jiggle the mouse and wait a moment. Sometimes you have to turn off the monitor by hand, and then you would turn it back on and get your screen back. And sometimes you can just leave the monitor on and run the screensaver. That's your choice.
Right. Okay. Hey, one other question with Windows 10.
Yeah.
Is that going to become obsolete now? Is it next year in October?
October of 2025, yes.
Yeah.
And as we said at the beginning of the show. Hi, how are you? At the beginning of the show, we said that sometime next year, Microsoft will make it available that you will be able to extend support for Windows 10 for another year for $30.
Okay, yeah, I think I heard you say that. Okay.
But then after that, you are done.
Right. So sooner or later you have to convert if you
want. Yeah, at some point you're going to, particularly if your machine is capable of running Windows 11, you'll be able to do that on the same machine.
You'll wake up one morning and have Windows 11.
Well, that's pretty much the way that works.
Microsoft has been known to ignore the "No, I don't want to install it" button.
Yeah.
Okay. Will it be free? Windows 11.
Yes, Windows 11. You're not paying for yet.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Now I heard you guys talking about the Linux software.
Yes,
Linux.
Now, if you wanted to try that, how do you do that? How do you get the thumb drive? Can you just download that from the
internet? What you do is you download the software, and then you use a program like Rufus, which you can also download, to install it on the thumb drive as a bootable drive.
Okay.
Then you turn your machine off, and you need to know how to do this, but you turn your machine off, you throw the thumb drive in so it's connected. And then as it's booting up, you hit some key combination, and on most machines it's different, but on Dell I believe it's F11, I believe.
I think you're right.
Okay.
And you just keep tapping F11, tap, until it comes up and says, okay,
do
you want to boot from? And you say, oh, I want to boot from the USB drive. And then bang, you're in Linux.
Okay.
Now, again, because Linux is larger than most thumb drives, it will, thumb drives are slow to move data, so it will be slow to load. But B, it will have to decompress what it loads.
And you can get a look and feel.
So it's a little slow to run, right? Because it's going to do that.
Yeah.
But it's not, once it's loaded in, it's fast. And it at the very least gives you an idea.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for, an idea, because I've never used it.
Yeah, you'll be able to, and the beauty, as Dave said earlier, is you can change which version you try over and over and over. There are hundreds of Linux variations. We talk about the various flavors of Ubuntu and the various flavors of Fedora and the various flavors of Mint, but you know, those are just three families of hundreds of families of Linux. So you can do pretty much whatever you like.
Sure.
With all different looks and feels. As a matter of fact, you can also, just go to YouTube. And you can have, people have done various
walkthroughs
on the different flavors of Linux and that you could sit there and kind of, narrow your search down to as which ones you want to just test drive.
Okay.
It's kind of like minor cars.
Sounds good.
Some people like this brand, some people like that brand. Yeah.
Well, and in addition, with Linux, once you know what you're doing, you can change the front end on the fly.
Yep.
So every time I boot up on one of my laptops, I have a choice of three different front ends, KDE, XFCE, and...
it's the buttons up in the top corner, right?
Well, it just comes down with a drop-down menu.
Yep.
And I pick whichever Linux version I want, and then I'm in that one until I reboot.
Yep. Sweet.
So does Linux come with, like, an Office suite?
Yes, LibreOffice, which you can also run on Windows, by the way. You're not limited to Microsoft Office.
Mm-hmm.
LibreOffice is free, and it is available on every major Linux distribution.
And is it compatible with Windows and all the other documents that I have on my computer now?
About 99.9%. There are some. There are some of the more esoteric Excel formulas.
Pivot tables?
Uh-huh.
Functions, rather, that don't work with correctly under LibreOffice. But 99.9% of everything works that way. I've been telling people for years, I used to be the systems administrator at the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at RIT, and they were very much a Microsoft house. But for 20 years, I used LibreOffice, and nobody knew.
Yeah. And there's other great programs that if you happen to like, that there is such a repository of programs to do different things that you might do under Windows that are available under Linux, and they're free.
It's a package manager, and you can load all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's good. That's good to know. I've never used it. I hear you guys talking about it all the time. And
it's fun.
I'm very excited about it.
It's a very good operating system.
All right. Great. Great.
All right.
Thank you very much, gents. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Pat. Have fun. I learned this week that there is a built-in package manager for Windows. It's called WinGet. So I could say something like, I don't know what packages are available, but I could say something like WinGet at the command line, WinGet install LibreOffice, and it will.
Isn't that probably part of the Linux subsystem they built into Windows recently?
I don't know. I didn't have a chance to play around with it. I was busy with other things. I just ran across it. It's on my list of things to play with at some point.
Please, you know, add that to my to-do list. There are 2,740 things on your to-do list.
Please, you have no idea. I have eight different to-do lists. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Greece, New York. What's up, Bill?
Hi, guys. Back again just for your last caller.
Yeah.
You don't have to get into getting a bootable thumb drive. Through your browser, you can go to DistroC, that's SCA, distroc.com, and you can try 21 different Linux distributions in your browser, and you don't have to install anything.
That's true. That's absolutely true. Again, they run a little slow,
yep.
but you can run them, and you're absolutely right. You can play with them all you want. You can't save data. You can't, you know, it's not going to be your daily driver.
You're just trying to get the look and feel.
But you're getting a feel for what it's like. You're absolutely right. DistroC is correct. I should have mentioned that. I did not. Thank you.
I have a great day.
You too. DistroC is distrosea.com. It's somewhere in our list. Steve's looking it up
I'm
now.
I'm going to pop it to the top.
He's going to pop it to the top. Top popping. And that's another way you can do that. So you can check out multiple Linux distributions without ever having to leave your browser. And see at least what they look like and how they feel and how they work. And I mean, they all work the same, right? You're going to get a window that you have their files and your other folders in and like that. So, you know, there's not a surprise there anywhere in the sense that it does something phenomenally different from Windows. It's going to look different, certainly depending on which version of Linux you decide to play with.
Which logo you want.
Which logo you want is essentially the difference.
The dragonfly, fly the eagle, the puppy,
right.
the spider.
Right. And mm-hmm. and each of those is a slightly different version. They put slightly different things in slightly different places, but they all basically do the same thing that Windows and the Mac do. They show you Windows full of files and full of folders and folders full of files, and you double-click on a folder and it opens up, and you double click on a file and it opens the associated program. It's not really unusual. It works the same way no matter what you're in. It's just where things are. And we've talked about this for years. When you get a new version of an operating system, it's like getting a new car. You still know how to drive, you just don't know where the radio is.
Mm-hmm.
And after a couple of weeks, you learn where the radio is, and it's like you never had a different car. And the same thing with computers. I've told the story before where a coworker came and asked me to help her with her Mac. I'm not a Mac guy, but I was not at the time, and so I went and helped her. And it turns out she couldn't figure out how to turn it back to English from Chinese. Luckily, I closed my eyes, gave God the keyboard, and remembered, okay, if this is probably the file menu, this is probably the settings menu, this is probably, okay, and we found, you know, finally we saw the word English,
clicked
on it, magic happened.
Yep.
But it wasn't a different operating system, it was a different way of looking at the same operating system. And basically, a different distribution is simply a different way of looking at all the same functions.
I think I've told a story in the past where we had a customer wanted Arabic OS on his Mac, and so we did. But he'd learned all the technical words in English, so he was back translating, oh, that's what control panels means. But then he got mad because it was Saudi Arabic and he was Jordanian.
Right.
Subtle differences. Now, would you imagine converting to redneck English or posh English or Klingon? Google, you can search in Klingon.
Yep.
You can search in Elmer Fuddism.
Right.
It's not true unless you read it in the original Klingon.
Yeah, most versions of Linux have a ludicrously number of different languages, human languages, not just computer languages,
yep.
but human languages are available in Linux. I don't think there are, you know, they say there are over 7,000 human languages. I don't think all 7,000 of them are in Linux. In fact, there are only 218 in Linux. So, in Ubuntu, I don't know about every version of Linux, but in Ubuntu, back in 2012, there were 218 supported languages. I suspect it's more now. So the likelihood that you would find both Jordanian English, Arabic, and whatever the other version of Arabic was, would be high.
Yeah.
Actually. All right. That music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. I particularly want to thank those of you who were kind and generous enough to pledge during the pledge drive. We did not make our goal. That is not your fault, those of you who pledged. So thank you very much for your pledges. We are humbled and honored that you would join us in this little adventure. But we're done with this adventure for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?